Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to SJS on this Tuesday. Great to have you with us. Bucknell tomorrow night will play a Colgate Nittany Lion basketball team back at home with Michigan State as the Big Ten schedule eases up for Penn State. So we welcome you to the show. It's great to have you with us. And Tim Brando of CBS Sports and also from Yahoo Sports will be on the show today. One of the truly outstanding broadcasters in our time. Versatility, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. He's been part of the Braves broadcast for years and, of course, in the studio with CBS Sports for many, many years and hosting his own talk show. Well-connected, intelligent, one of the truly nice guys I've been around over the last 25 years I've known Tim. And on top of that, he and I have the distinction of being the two broadcasters, along with Don Fisher, the three broadcasters, that broadcast the infamous 88-84 Penn State-Indiana basketball game 20 years ago this year. We will get Don Fisher on the show to talk about it that day. We'll have Timmy on to talk about it, and I'll bring it up as well when we have him on later today. But that goes back to February 3rd, 1993? And Penn State thought it won it in regulation, but the foul was called on Greg Bartram, whom, by the way, were lining up for the show that day, instead of calling it on Reynolds, which it should have been. You know, it's just one of the crazier endings I've ever seen where officiating played an incredible role and allowed Indiana, then the number one team in the country, to win. And but Penn State had its chances in that game. Penn State was up 7 in the first overtime. Everybody forgets that. Indiana came back, tied it again, then won it in the second overtime. So Tim Brando will be on the show today. We're looking forward to that. Plus, a new segment we have today. Rants from Kevin. All that and more. But first, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick. Timmy B. He'll be on the show at 3:35 today, right after the news at the bottom of the hour. We'll have Tim Brando on. We have a lot to talk about with Tim.
By the way, and best sports broadcast music ever. Don't ever change it.
I'm sure he has no control over that, but that's okay. We'll mention that to him.
No, I've always liked it. And that's the one nice thing about being a CBS radio affiliate. We have the access to that music, and I enjoy using it during basketball season as our theme music as well.
Sure. No, it's very good. Very, very good. They, believe me, they work hard at that. They put a lot into it. Lance Armstrong has big problems to deal with. A big public perception problem and a trust problem. He is now has to figure out a way in his life as to how he's going to make some money, because right now he's not allowed to do very much. And with his admissions that he has made, I mean, the Olympic Games are now even considering dropping cycling as a sport in the Olympics.
You know, it is a sport that has been tainted quite a bit. And there's been a lot of cheating in it, and a lot of cheating that has gone without being noticed.
Right. Well, they have big problems. And he has a lot of problems that he has to deal with here at this stage. I mean, he is going to have to deal with a public that now, I mean, he can't endorse anything.
No.
Can't endorse anything.
Steve, if you remember when this first came out, we discussed it on this program, and I was a huge defender. I'm very disappointed. I am very disappointed because I was really, really hoping that the allegations were not true. And the fact that he denied them, I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, even though it didn't look good for a while. Now it makes it almost impossible to win my trust back from a if it comes to him endorsing a product.
Sure. Right. Exactly. No. Your trust is important. Okay. Your trust is important. You represent a lot of people that he needs to trust him now. Well, if you're not going to trust him as somebody who was loyal to the last moment until he went on Oprah Winfrey, if he's not going to win your trust back, considering you went as far as you could to the wall with him, then you probably represent a lot of people who feel exactly the same way.
Yeah, I was completely let down.
And that's the difference. I wasn't let down at all because I never cared. You know, I mean,
there's a bonus to that.
Everybody has their own interests, okay? All right? Did I think it was great he was winning the Tour de France? Yeah. Did I root for him in the Olympics? Yeah. Did I really care about what? No.
But it was but it was such a great story. It was like, here's a guy that came back from cancer, and now he's won this many Tour de France, and now he's going into the Olympics. It's like, it's a story you just want to follow. And then to come out and say, nope, I absolutely didn't do it. It's like, great, I am so glad you didn't do it. And then to find out, well, maybe I did. Maybe I did. I'm like, come on.
I mean, this goes back to something we talked about on the show last week. I was talking about who I voted in for the Baseball Hall of Fame and
sure.
so forth. All right. And performance-enhancing drugs, I take a little more time to think about it on a show like this. And here are the people I feel badly for? The people I feel badly for are the people that went out, ran miles, biked miles, lifted weights, okay? Took no more than an Advil, maxed out everything they had, had to compete against these individuals, and weren't as good. Now, they may not have been as good anyway, just on pure natural talent, but they had no shot because despite the fact that their training regimen was, look, I need to run X amount of miles. I need to bike X amount of miles. I need to swim. I need to lift weights. I need to lift the weights in this way. Hey, I'm going to get down there to spring training or to training camp, whatever, in the best shape of my life. Give myself the best shot at having a great year. And somebody else is doing a different regimen. You have no shot.
What about the person that he took the play that he took the place at the Olympics? What about that the person that was in the next slot? You know,
for all we know, that person's doping too. They just weren't as good at it.
It could be true.
Okay.
And then here's what I ask myself. As this information was coming out, Steve, why do I feel differently about Lance Armstrong than I do against Barry Bonds? Because Bonds was successful before he allegedly started this. Lance Armstrong was successful because of this.
Right.
That's where I differentiate the two.
Well, you also have no feeling or affinity toward Bonds. You actually had emotionally invested yourself in Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, I suppose that's true, too.
All right. Well, I mean, that's, for me, to talk about what they should or shouldn't do in this instance, it's easy for me. I really don't care whether he did or not. Didn't care that he was winning, didn't care he was losing. Didn't. Never had a yellow wristband in my life. I know people who have cancer, so I help out with Coaches versus Cancer. That's how I help out. But when it came to Live Strong, wearing wristbands, wearing a shirt, no. Never did. Never even considered it. Thought it was great for the cause.
Well, that's the other thing. Somebody asked me this a couple of weeks ago. What happens if Lance Armstrong comes out and says, yes, I did? Would you stop wearing? I don't have a wristband, by the way, either. But would you stop wearing a wristband if you had it? I said, no, I don't think I would, because I don't associate with the sport, what he did in the sport, with what he did as a charitable situation.
Look, first of all, the American Cancer Society will tell you that there are 1,000 different ways to donate.
Sure.
Okay, to various charities. For one thing, Penn State has Coaches versus Cancer. It is among the top 5 Coaches versus Cancer fundraising organizations in the country in college basketball. It's here, right here at Penn State. Very dedicated group. Passionate. They've lost people to cancer within their group. They have people within their group that have beaten cancer. Through Penn State basketball, through the various events they have, reverse drawing, golf tournament, things like that, they've been able to raise money and also put together the Bob Perks Fund. Bob Perks lost his life to cancer. And money like that, this is in our area. For example, you have cancer. You need a lift chair because you just can't get up, stand up any longer on your own. You contact the Bob Perks Fund, they'll buy the lift chair for you. Like, in other words, you make a donation to that, you're actually putting money or an item directly to an individual. When people donate money, they do not want to donate to the administration. Okay? Now, for those in charities listening out there, I apologize, but facts are facts. People do not want to donate so the salary structure is fine at the organization. They want to donate because they think they're helping somebody. They feel like they're actually handing the individual with cancer the cash, they will donate. The Bob Perks Fund does that. Jamie Bestwick, whom we've had on this show before, has his foundation. 100% of the proceeds go to people. There is no administration, or it's volunteer. Lift for Life, kidney cancer research. Okay? Number one kidney cancer research fundraising group in the country. Penn State football players. It's their baby. They take it from stem to stern. They have their own administration. Their meetings throughout the course of the year to set it up. So there are a lot of ways to donate to cancer research, not just the Live Strong Foundation. Now, where he gave hope to people was that, look, you can be a cancer survivor and you can get back to full function and be great in your life. That's where he gave a lot of people hope. Now he has fellow competitors, teammates, sponsors. And for him personally, how is he going to make money? He doesn't know. That's why he's doing this tour right now, hoping to somehow repair his reputation so he can be, I think, in triathlons, I believe, correct?
Yeah, triathlons was the last thing.
And I know that his name invokes a lot of emotion. It invokes no emotion in me at all. None. Either way.
Well, I watched the tour because of the success he had. I would have never have watched it otherwise.
I never did.
I was intrigued by it. Now, just mad.
Tim Brando comes up next. We have a lot to talk about with Timmy B, and we shall as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. The Hilsher's General Store hotline is at 1-800-795-9565. Hilsher's General Store, you have to go there because when you go there, you'll make many trips. 7 miles south of Sealands Grove. All set with your theme music?
No, not now. Well, maybe I am. Yeah, I am. I'm good.
Fabulous. Well, let's go to Shreveport, Louisiana, where we're going to be joined by Tim Brando. Tim, welcome. How are things down there?
Steve, I'm good. It looks and feels a little more like State College than it does Shreveport today. We've got a wintry mix and some ice and overpasses freezing over and interstates closing and that kind of thing. So it's I'm having to take the back roads home from my own studio, which is generally about a 10-minute drive. It's taken me about 20 today, and I'm having to go slowly. But I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. You've done, 26 different sports along the way in your career. And actually, there was one game that you did that, for Penn State basketball fans, they'll remember forever, maybe all for the wrong reasons. But I did Penn State. Don Fisher did Indiana. You did the national broadcast. It was number one Indiana and Penn State 20 years ago. Now you and I aren't going to commit. We have 20 years behind us, all right? But do you have, you've done so many games in your career. Do you really have any recollection of that night where Penn State was such a massive underdog and almost got it?
You never forget the Sam Licklider game, do you?
Yeah, you never forget the Sam Licklider game.
I know the conference office didn't forget it. And Bill Raftery and I were on hand to call that game. And I really still to this day feel bad for Bruce Perkel because I don't know that his career ever really recovered from it. That would have been a remarkable, really breakthrough win for Penn State at that time. If you go back and look at where they were as a program, some of the personnel they had on that team, trying to get over the hump and playing as a new member of the conference at that point, it was just a shame that had to happen. And I remember it vividly, Steve, because at that time I was, I'm 56 now, so I was 36 then. I learned a great lesson as a broadcaster because our game was running over. And I want to say that was part of Super Tuesday, and there was an SEC game that was going to be coming on after us on ESPN at that time, maybe Georgia, Florida, something like that, because people were going to be tuning in from that part of the world to watch that game, and we were spilling over into that next game's time period. The producers and the executives at ESPN were sticklers on making people aware, if you're tuning in for the Georgia-Florida game, that they didn't have, six different networks then. They only had the one. You know, this was before ESPN2, News, 360, the Cortez, all of that. It meant if the game was going long, then no one was seeing the Georgia-Florida game. So they're in our ear nonstop, telling us to please remind everyone that the Georgia-Florida game next. It got really bothersome at that time, but I understood that we needed to tell people. But you could not effectively say why the game was into overtime if you did not point out the horrible call that was a horrible non-call that wasn't made by Sam Licklider. So we continued to go back. If you look at it on Classic or whatever, you'll notice there's probably, I don't know, it was very unfair to him when you think about it in retrospect, because every time I said we're in overtime because, our directors would take a shot of Licklider, and I would remind everyone what a bogus non-call that was. And I think the player in question was Lyndon Jones of Indiana. I can't remember who it was he had by the jersey.
It was Reynolds who grabbed Greg Bartram.
Yeah, that sounds right. So we continually just hammered poor Sam Licklider. But it wasn't because I couldn't get over or wanted to just crucify him. It was because our producers were telling me nonstop, hey, remind everyone that we're in overtime and the Georgia-Florida game will be coming on, and there's a reason why we're in overtime. And we continued. And it was like the next day, and this was uncommon back then for the league office to respond as quickly as it did. But the poor guy took a big-time hit from the conference office the next day. But I did feel even worse, though, for Parkhill, because that was a game that if they had won, maybe his legacy would be a little bit different. Maybe he wouldn't have opted out and had a career that ended, in my opinion, far too soon. But that was a very memorable regular season game for me to call at that particular time. And I don't remember a lot of specifics about every game I've ever done, but I do remember unique moments and the personnel and the officials involved when something really memorable happened. And that night was certainly memorable in that venerable old building at Penn State. It was special. It really was.
You just had Michigan-Ohio State on Sunday where the last unbeaten went down. What still impressed you about Michigan, Tim? In victory, what impressed you about Ohio State?
Well, I think Michigan is, Steve, I think they're a potential Final Four team, even with their really offensively poor performance in Columbus. I think what happened to them was, as a young team, a number of freshmen and a sophomore who's supposed to be playing like a senior, Trey Burke, they were exposed in a hostile environment, maybe not being ready to get it in gear as quickly as you have to when you're playing a team that maybe feels like it has to prove itself as a top 20 team, which Ohio State did after getting blown off the floor with Champaign and playing just well enough to win in West Lafayette. I think they wanted to send a statement that they're still a Final Four team from a year ago, and that even without players of the caliber of Buford and Sullinger, they can still play with people at a big-time level. And Aaron Pratt wanted, I think, to prove to everyone in Columbus that he, even though Burke is outstanding, he's still the man. And I think he took that matchup with Trey Burke pretty personally. But to me, Michigan, to be in a position to be down 21, come back, really have a good chance of winning that game on the road with Stauskas getting an offer, I mean, an absolute goose egg, and he's averaging just under 14 a game. You don't get out of Glenn Robinson or Hardaway what you want to get from them. Says a lot, because they had to grind to get the points that they got, and they still only lost by three. So they impressed me a great deal. Ohio State is in that group, maybe that second tier. They may be leading the second tier of teams in the Big Ten. I think you put Wisconsin in that group. I think you
Illinois.
I think you put Michigan State in that group. Minnesota, I think, is actually good enough to be considered to be a conference champion. Yeah. I think they have a chance to really challenge both Michigan and Indiana. I think they're that good. But Ohio State's in that. I think they may be the leader of the second wave of teams. And what we learned about them was that if Amir Williams can get better, become the kind of player that he was coming out of high school and live up to the potential, maybe by February, Ohio State can be a sleeper to make another run to the Final Four.
For you, now for me, when I prepare games, whether it's Penn State football, Penn State basketball, obviously you're around a certain team all the time, so you're really working as hard as you can on the opponent to make sure you're completely ready for them. You should have a good handle on the team you see every day. For you, getting ready, especially when it comes to tournament time, for multiple teams the way you have to, what kind of preparation do you have to put in? Because these are great teaching points for the class I teach as well. The preparation you need to put in, Tim, for that, and then your talk show preparation, how much does each dovetail and help out the other?
You know, Steve, it's a great question. I tell young people all the time that are getting into our profession that if you really want to succeed, it's not just about understanding the sport, but understanding broadcasting, and that you first have to have an affinity for that. You need to have a passion for being on the air and respecting every game. You mentioned the 26 different sports. A lot of those are obscure sports that I did, but I had to do them to get airtime. You don't come out of the gates and start calling NCAA tournament games or big-time SEC or Big Ten football games. You have to earn your chops, and in doing so, you're thrown into a situation where you might be doing you know, the NCAA Division II wrestling championships or the Division III women's basketball championship or a team handball at the United States Olympic Festival. And every sport has a glossary, and you got to come to terms with that. I approach the NCAA tournament each year with the kind of zest and zeal, if you will, of a rookie. Because what you learn, what you find out over time, is not what you know, but how much you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you would agree that for all of us that cover college sports, a lot of the fans think we know a great deal about the sport that we're covering and the teams that are in the conference, particularly the region of the country that you're in. What we find out, or I find out as a broadcaster every year of the NCAA tournament, is how much I don't know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you do. And, yep, exactly.
I mean, I can go out and do three. I can go out and do three games a week, two regionally in the ACC and the SEC, and maybe a CBS game on the weekend. But by year's end, when the field of 68 is announced, I find out what region of the country I'm in, and I'm lucky if I know three of the eight teams. There are five teams I know absolutely nothing about.
Right.
And I'm using that entire week, and usually that week we find out on Sunday night where we're going to be. If it's Thursday, Saturday, I've got to leave on Tuesday night. I've got to be at practices on Wednesday and be ready to go on all those teams on Thursday. I'm in absolute cram course mode on all of those teams, trying to see as much video as I can, get as many anecdotes from clips, press clippings through the course of the year on teams that are in maybe the Patriot League or the Big Sky or the Mid-East Athletic or the Southwest Athletic Conference, teams that are just simply not on television as much. But you've got to be able to deliver the goods for them as you would any of the BCS Conference teams who are accustomed to being on the air all the time. And you're accustomed to seeing them all the time. And that's where you find out how much you don't know. And I'm both privileged to do it and humbled by the realization that I still, after all these years, know less than I think a number of people would like to believe I really do know.
Right. We're all in the exact same boat. You just outlined exactly my thought process. We're on the same track. You had a great handle on what the Sugar Bowl was going to be like, and you know how brilliant he is. Those interviews that you do along the way, down the road, did they pay off for you in terms of some of the knowledge you can deliver on a national television broadcast, whether studio or game?
Yeah. Again, going back to that, the radio show that's simulcast now on the CBS Sports Network, in many respects, is kind of my baby.
Yeah.
It's a reflection of the life and times of Tim Brando, so to speak. It isn't a job. It's not a vocation. It's a way of life. And I think that when it becomes a way of life, then the audience, or the viewers and listeners, understand that this is what you're all about, that this is who you are. And the relationships that you have with the people that you're covering have a lot to do with what you do. And I tell people all the time, I am not, never will be, and I don't think any young broadcaster ever should be, a fan. You should never be a fan of a team, college or pro. Now, that isn't to say that maybe if you didn't, there's anything wrong with admitting, hey, when I was a youngster, I grew up in New York and I was a Jets fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm okay with that.
Right.
I think it's fine that you do that, because that's who you are and it represents what the way you grew up. That's normal. That's just the human spirit speaking out when a broadcaster says that. But I do not root, nor do I ever care who wins a game. But relationships with coaches are that's the human factor too. There are some guys in the profession that I like more than others, and I know that's going to come out. I know that that's going to be realized by anyone that's listening and watching what I do, and I've got no problem with that because objectivity has never been at issue with me. We all have to be from somewhere. We all are, I think, from a human standpoint, going to be guilty of likes and dislikes, and that's okay. But in that forum, in that particular role as a sports talk show host where you're giving opinions and making observations, that's okay. There's no problem, I think, in allowing your hair to come down and saying that to people. But when you're calling a game, it's got to be even-handed, right down the middle. Now, there may be times when you're more energetic than others because a great play was made by a guy in question. But what team he's playing for and how much noise is being made by the fans at the game should have no bearing on the way your presentation is delivered.
Tim, I can't thank you enough for being with us. You know that you come to the show with my highest respect on every level, and we hope to have you back on at some point when the time permits for you.
I have the same thing, just right back at you, return to sender. I've always been a fan of your work, and by the way, I've really grown in the last 12 months with everything that you guys have had to go through there. My respect, not only for guys such as yourself, but for the people that have had to deal with all of that in State College. I have tremendous respect for what you guys have gone through and the manner in which you've handled it, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Tim, thank you, and we look to have you on down the road again very soon. Thank you.
Absolutely, Steve. Thank you.
Tim Brando, CBS Sports. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
Hello, 2013. That means Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying customers for 98 years. I'd say if you need a recommendation on where to buy your next new vehicle, there's probably been 50,000 customers you could ask. Sunbury Motors Ford sold the most F-150 pickup trucks in the entire Philadelphia zone. They're the number one F-Series dealer. Unbelievable. SMC has 99 F-Series available starting at $21,954. If you're looking at awards, Sunbury Motors Hyundai ended 2012 as the number one Hyundai dealer in customer satisfaction in the Eastern Sales District. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 23 Hyundai Elantras with American luxury affordable by discounting a brand new Navigator or next new Ford Lincoln Hyundai or the
Hold assembled for quality and durability to last and last. And now, a select inventory of appliances from these trusted names at Peter.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Our thanks to Tim Brando, Coquise, Washington on tomorrow's show. Jack Arute looks like end of next week. That's good. You fall down or?
No. I'm taking notes.
Taking notes?
Well, I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes. Taking notes is
the
program
goes.
Breaks
are for. Oh, my goodness.
I like to get all my thoughts in one place.
Let's see.
Because I was listening to some of the Timmy's tips, and I was taking notes on those, too.
Okay.
See, not only is this program entertaining, but also educational.
Well, it's meant to be. One of the things I try to do is I try to talk to people about, for example, I asked them about Ohio State, Michigan in general, but I also try to talk to them about what they do, how they go about their business. Because, look, he can deliver an opinion. He watched Michigan play Ohio State. Well, the number of people out there that watched Michigan play Ohio State on Sunday, you know, he confirmed some things that they saw or maybe whatever. But it's how he goes about his business, what he does to get ready for a game, that behind-the-scenes feel. I like to give that to people sometimes. Coquise Washington, by the way, tomorrow on the show.
And also possibly coming up as early as this week,
Kayla Klein.
Well, that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Kayla Klein is tomorrow at 3:15. Kayla
Correct.
Klein tomorrow. And at 3:35, Coquise Washington.
And then coming up later this week, Yaakov Yisrael, the new head coach of the Shamokin Indians. You're going to set that up for later this week, the way it looks.
Very nice.
Former Penn Stater, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No double Y, very well. We'll get him on the show and talk about that. And yes, at some point we will get Kale Sanderson back on the show. Okay.
Well, it's the busy season right now.
Well, no. I mean, we had him on during the busy season. We had him on last month.
I understand. It's the busy season.
Yeah. Received an email. How do you deal with the national media? Like, okay.
That's a tough one.
Let's see. Jason Johnson made a comment. Thanks. Keep up the good work. I don't know for what.
That was getting Kayla Klein on tomorrow's show.
Oh, okay. All right, good. We're looking forward to that. She won punt, pass, and kick. The other question was from, let's see. Here we go. How do you deal with the national media? This is from Lonnie. It says, Steve, longtime fan, love to listen to your perspective. It's been a lot of times that I have tuned you in over the past year on the internet. I live here in Pottstown, grew up in New Berlin, and have stepped back from the ledge, so to speak. Anyway, with the pending lawsuit to fight sanctions, I happen to make the mistake of reading Christine Brennan's op-ed. That is a mistake.
Oops.
In which she basically reiterated the NCAA's response to the lawsuit. That is one person that will never be on this show. With that, I decided to email her to point out some of the obvious issues that I have with her opinion and to request a little better perspective as to why she felt the way she did. I am utterly amazed at the responses, more like reactions, for someone who is a nationally recognized journalist. I have no idea why I am passing this exchange to you other than to wonder how in the world you deal with these people.